Now, I went to an IFA meeting in Athlone on Thursday night. Department of Agriculture officials at the top table trying to communicate their message that any re-wetting will be voluntary and that it could represent an opportunity, but they were facing several hundred sceptical farmers looking mostly unpersuaded. There was a lot of memories in the room of previous environmental initiatives that had delivered only obligations, regulations and extra work, but no financial support. So I thought that the best person in the best position to navigate a path through this thicket is Trinity College botanist Dr. Catherine Farrell. She understands the science of why the re-wetting has to happen, but she has also worked in the past to actually re-wet land without accidentally flooding neighbouring farmland.
So when I worked with Bord na Mona, we reviewed the 80,000 hectares that Bord na Mona has. We identified areas that could be re-wetted, and in many instances we raised the water table right up to the surface, and in some places working alongside with adjoining landowners who were concerned that this re-wetting or raising the water level might have an impact on their land, and finding the solution that worked for them as well.
So you didn't always sit in luxuriously appointed ivory towers. You have rolled up the sleeves and got the hands dirty. What have you learned about allaying landowner concerns around re-wetting?
Well, the first thing is to listen to them. So it's to go in and not tell them that, you know, this is what we're going to do. It's to go and walk the land with them and listen to his side, listen to or her side. But what's important is, you know, what we heard from the two great farmers that you had. We have Mark, and, you know, he has heard something from somebody and it's frightened him. But all of this work is voluntary, 100%. Nobody's going to take the land from him.
Why is this happening now? Why has the department set itself this task?
Well, we have to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions to comply with our climate action plan, our land use and land use change and forestry targets. So we have ambitious targets and we have to achieve them. 20% of our terrestrial land area is covered by peat soils. How we manage our peat soils is really important from a carbon perspective. We have to actually step up and start acting now on these targets.
This is where it gets diabolically complicated, though, because on the one hand, if these lands are not re-wet, the fines could end up forming a fairly significant proportion of that 26 billion estimated cost here. On the other hand, this is privately owned land. Nobody can be coerced into doing anything. They have to be actively persuaded into doing something. But on the other hand from that, it would be immoral, would it not, for the taxpayer to be offering a package of incentives that would be the equivalent of what they're earning from their dairy business right now, when there are so many other uses for those taxpayer euros elsewhere. It's a pretty knotty problem. Is there a solution?
It's knotty, and a farmer needs to be sure that by taking action today, I'm not shooting myself in the foot in the next 10 years, right? But also, I need to guarantee my income if I raise the water level. I want to have that guarantee for 30 years. So the term here would be, how do I de-risk what I'm going to do now, today? So combining the public finance, so that could be the cap payments, or it could be, you know, a climate action fund, like Bord na Mona got a climate action fund for their land, so that the farmers should be supported. And then what we have is we have a number of companies, and farmers fall within their value chain. So what that means is these companies are relying on these farmers, and those companies need to reduce the carbon emissions in their value chain. So it's in their interest to support Mark or Ian to reduce their carbon emissions.
So they can pay them to offset with a carbon credit. But the problem there is that these farmers, these landowners, are looking for guarantees for 30, 40 years down the line. And the value of carbon credits might go down just as much as they would go up. So you can't make them a promise, can you, that they are still going to be getting X number of euros a year in 40 years' time?
I think we have to, and we have to link it to the benefits that are also not just carbon. So it always frustrates me as someone who sees the holistic view. So when you manage your farm, you're managing it for your production, but it's not just about the gas that you can't see, it's the water quality, it's the soil quality, the soil structure, which helps if you've got a good soil. So all this week we've been talking about soil health at this summit, and that underpins good production. So if we can get our soils healthy, we can reduce the amount of nitrogen that we need to bring in, we can reduce inputs, we can get the same outputs, we can have climate resilience, we can have more nature, we can have more diverse flows of natural information around the place, but importantly, natural infrastructure that will help to absorb water in those big, massive showers that we're starting to see, that can help to hold on to the water in the big drought. So for me, this is about the farmer. There's a lot of talk. We have to start with the farmer, engage with the farmer, support them as much as possible from climate resilience, but business resilience. And this scaremongering is not helpful for anyone.
How much of an outlier do you think Ian Sheridan's farm is? Or might there be a considerable number of farms out there and land that would actually benefit from being re-wet?
I don't think Ian is an outlier at all. I think that he is one of many. I think he's a leader in this situation. And when I went to the Farm Peace End of Project Conference, there were farmers of all ages there, lots of farmers that were over 60. They were really enjoying being part of this story. So they felt involved and they were proud to be doing their bit for climate. And we learned so much from hearing their experience. And they were all different. But importantly, they were getting money. So they were getting paid, they were getting rewarded. But there's more to it. And Brendan Dunford always talks about, you know, the head, the heart and the pocket. And we have to address all of those elements. If the farmers aren't part of the conversation, we're not going to see the innovation that we need. The more that we have of including farmers in the conversation, farmers are the ultimate innovators.
So there is an opportunity here, rather than a cause for anxiety, which is the way that this is being cast at the moment.
So in my experience, when anybody is faced with change, there's an immediate anxiety. I've been doing this for as long as I've been around, for 20 or 30 years as a farmer, maybe in Mark's case. I grew up with Dad on the farm and he showed me what to do. But change, that man, his father, experienced a lot of change. So the change from the way we would have done it 40 years ago was quite dramatic to where we've got now, into a much more refined, almost monoculture type of system. So change is just part of navigating this climate action that we need to take, and climate action to ensure that there is, you know, a healthy planet for us all to be living in 20, 30 years and for Mark's family.
And deal with it now rather than find ourselves in 2030 with taxpayers saying, why the hell didn't you do more back in 2025?
So I'm a taxpayer and I find it very frustrating to think that you could be spending my money now on action and not wasting a load of it in 5 years' time.
Dr. Catherine Farrell there. We're going to be discussing a little bit later on in the programme how we have actually started paying these fines already for missed 2020 targets. 100 million euro gone, paid out, not coming back. But I think we might bring the temperature down after the ad break by going swimming.
Email countrywide@rte.ie.